began a series on choosing to cheat. And last week we talked about choosing to cheat God. And this week we're going to be thinking about choosing to cheat our spouse. And now, if you weren't here, I'll explain a little bit more of that concept in a moment. I want to begin by telling you a story about Jim and Phyllis. Phyllis was becoming a hot topic speaker and a very sought-after speaker on the topic of adolescence and family systems. She had done a lot of education in that, and she was a very good communicator and could speak before audiences, and so she was wanted around the country at conferences and various type gatherings. Jim, her husband, was a web designer, and when Phyllis got into this, Jim encouraged her to go about doing this, and they had two kids, and they had an agreement basically worked out. But Jim would stay home because he was a web designer and he could do his job there and help the kids get to school and things of that nature. And Phyllis would go on the road some. And as Phyllis went on the road, her job got more and more successful. And she was sought after more and more. Also, her paycheck increased so that she was making twice as much as Jim. Well, she had been doing this for a few years now. And one time she comes in, and Jim has left a note there for her. And it says, "Phyllis, I want you to move out." He says, "I want us to quit pretending our marriage is over. I want you to move out." Well, Phyllis was shocked by this. She goes to see a counselor, and she says, "I don't know what's going on." He says there's not another woman. He says that he has... that there's nothing else going on that would make him want to leave. He says that it's just over, that the marriage is just over and he wants me to leave. And then the counselor asked her one question. He said, after talking to her and hearing her cry and upset for some time, he says, "Why, over the last little bit, what has he said would be the number one problem that y'all have?" And she said, "Well, I guess he would say for the last few years, the number one problem we had is that I'm never there. I'm always gone off doing my career, and I'm not there with him and the kids. That him and the kids are struggling because I'm not there." Well, Jim actually agreed to come in. A couple weeks had gone by, and Jim was still wanting her to leave, but he did agree to come in and talk to the counselor. And after a little discussion, he admitted that there was no other woman, there was no other real incentive for leaving, except that he thought the marriage was over, and he hated it for the kids, but he just didn't see how their marriage could come back together. And he said, when pressed, he said, "The number one problem is that she's just never there. And I've tried to get her to change, but she just hasn't been willing to change. And I keep telling the kids that she's always off helping the other mommies and daddies. She's just not here to be our wife and mom." Well, Jim and Phyllis represent our lesson this morning: choosing to cheat. You see, the question is, are we cheating our spouse? And we use them when we think that word cheat, we think about having some type of an affair. But as we talked about last week, what we said in this series on choosing to cheat is that basically all of us have full, busy lives. We have a limited amount of resources of time, energy, money, and the ability to give. And so therefore we have so many things pulling at us that we can't satisfy everybody and everything, so we've got to choose what we're going to cheat, because something's going to get cheated in our life, and we said we've got to rearrange our priorities to reflect the priorities of God so that we're only cheating the things that are not as important. But we so often do in this world, and what we struggle with is we cheat the things that are really less important. We cheat our spouse this morning. So we want to think about, are we choosing to cheat our spouse or our marriage? Really what we're asking here is, does your spouse feel cheated? Now, notice, first of all, that God expects us, because really we're talking about priorities, to prioritize our marriage. God, through the beginning, as we think about restructuring our life to reflect the priorities of God so that we're not cheating the things that God wants us to prioritize. It seems that we would be very clear, but I want to make a few points this morning to show, and I think all of us would understand, but I want to show biblically as well, that God expects us to prioritize our marriage. Last week we said the number one priority should be our God and our relationship with God. What I want to suggest is that our second priority that we really want to make sure we're not cheating, if we are married, is our marriage. Notice that from the beginning, God has exalted marriage. It was at the beginning or the creation of the world where God created marriage. Soon after He had created Adam and Eve, He created marriage. He put them together. He said that it was not good for man to be alone, and He made him a helpmeet comparable to him. And God joined them together, and He said, the two shall now be one flesh. God put them together and says, man shall not separate them. God also would say in that passage that the wife and the husband is a gift to the spouse. He brought Eve to Adam. Later on in Matthew chapter 19, Jesus, when He would speak to marriage, would say in verses 4 and 6, have you not read that He who created them from the beginning made them male and female? Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast or cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. They are no longer two, but one flesh. So I think it's clear that God has exalted marriage. But notice it's also important to realize that God wants us to value marriage. In fact, in the Old Testament, when you got married, you got a year off from military service. Probably didn't know that. But in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse number 5, when a man is newly married, he shall not go out with the army or be liable for any other public duty. He shall be free at home 1 year to be happy with his wife whom he has taken. It's interesting. But God says, I don't want, as soon as you get married, you're going off to war and fighting somewhere. I don't want you doing any public duty that gives you a lot of responsibility away from home. He says, I want for you to get your marriage off on a solid foundation. For the first year, men, you're exempt from military duty. God is saying, I value marriage. I want you to prioritize it. Now in Ephesians chapter 5, notice how God describes marriage here. In this passage, He describes it, of course, in relation to the relationship between Christ and His bride, the church. But notice the language of value and cherish in verse 28. He says, in the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. The term nourish means to feed, to give what it needs. The term cherish involves the idea of prizing highly. You might have an old photograph of your grandparents from 1913. It's a rare, it's one of your only pictures you have of them. You cherish that photo. You might have your diamond ring that came as a family heirloom from your great-grandma that she was given when she got married. You see, those are things that you cherish. God says we're supposed to cherish our marriage and our spouse. And so God values marriage and wants us to prioritize it in our life. And then notice that God also, not only does He exalt it, not only does He value it and want us to value it, but He also understands that He has given us responsibility in marriage. The passage that Joey read from 1 Corinthians 7 teaches this idea. In the context, Paul is talking about the immediate stress, the persecution, and all that the church was going through. And at that time, he says, it would be better for you to remain unmarried, be like I am, Paul says, than to get married. I don't believe that Paul is saying that in terms of for the overall context of living in the world and for us necessarily even today. And that's really a whole study of 1 Corinthians 7. But at this point, he's saying that it's best, he would say, not to get married. But notice in that, verse 32, he says one of the reasons for this is that when you get married, you have to care about the things of the world, what he says. How you might please your wife. And he says the wife must care about the things of the world, how she might please her husband. What Paul is saying is that if you're married, you have a responsibility to that union. And as an unmarried person, you have freedom to travel around preaching the gospel, travel around doing the things that Paul was doing. And Paul basically was saying, you can't do like I'm doing if you're married. And he's also probably saying, in this time of persecution, that if the church is heavily being persecuted, that it's going to cause a tremendous grief upon you, knowing that you've got to be concerned with the protection of your wife and your kids. So he's saying it would be better at this time to be unmarried. But notice the principle for us. And that is that a husband or a wife has the responsibility given by God of caring about that marriage and about one another. In Titus chapter 2, Paul would say in that passage that the wife is to love her husband. And then in Ephesians chapter 5 that we've already looked at, the Bible says husbands are to love their wives. And Colossians 3:19 says the same. And then in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, after talking about some of the roles of women in verses 1 through 6, verse 7 says, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So he says, husbands, you've got to do your best to understand your wife. Now, notice all these things that we've gone over. God expects us to exalt the place of marriage. In a society that is running down marriage, that is wanting to do away with marriage in many ways and just go to living together, or to devalue it in terms of it being between a man and a woman, God exalts marriage. In a society that says that you can exchange husbands like you exchange banks or other type businesses, God says you need to value your husband or your wife. In a society that says that you don't really have responsibility, marriage is about being happy, God says you need to recognize your duty and your responsibility within marriage. And so God expects us to prioritize our marriage. Now let's take these concepts and let's think about then how we prioritize our marriage. And while we're doing that, I want to give you an illustration. This is where the rock comes in. I want you to think about this illustration for a minute. Now, I'm going to use my wife as an illustration here. This is my rock. It's ending a beautiful rock. Worked hard on this rock. I went upstairs and picked it up from BBS. But this is my rock. And it's a very important rock to me. But I am very busy. So I'm going to ask my wife if she'll stand up and hold my rock. Now, she's out in the front yard. Picture she's standing out in the front yard. And I say, Amanda, this is a very important rock to me. I need you to hold it and take care of it for me. Now, I've got to do some things that are very important, so I can't take care of my rock. Can you do that for me? And she agrees to do that because she's a loving spouse. And she knows that this will actually make her greater in my eyes because she's helping me out. So I go off, and Amanda's holding my rock. And I'm taking care of things, and I've got some important things to do at work, and I'm working hard. And I told her, you know, I'll be back about lunch and get that rock. So now it's about lunchtime. Rock's getting real heavy. Amanda, I know I asked you only to carry that rock for a few hours. But you see, there's some guys that called. And they want to go play golf this afternoon. Do you mind holding that rock a little longer? Well, no, she doesn't. All right, go play golf. So I'm over here playing golf. And then get a phone call. It's 5 o'clock. Yeah, somebody's in the hospital. All right? And so, Amanda, this is really important. I need to do something. Do you mind holding that rock a little longer? No, good. So I go and take care of this. And it's about 8 o'clock at night. That rock is really, really heavy. Amanda's mental willingness is about to give way to her physical exhaustion. And I pull up in the driveway. It's 9 o'clock at night. And I'm walking up, and about that time, Amanda drops the rock. And I pull out flowers from around my back, and I say, "Honey, I brought you flowers. How can you drop my rock?" And Amanda's real upset. And she dropped my rock, and it shattered into pieces. And I can't put my rock back together. Now, what's the illustration here? The illustration is that all of us have a rock. And what happens is, in life, just like in that physical exhaustion, we all have a mental willingness to help out our spouse and carry their rock for them. But at some point, just like in John and Phyllis's relationship, John was willing to hold Phyllis's rock for her. In fact, he agreed to hold her rock for her because it was helping out the family and he saw all the good she was doing. So he said, "Yeah, I'll hold your rock, Phyllis." But over time, his mental willingness gave way not to physical exhaustion, but to emotional exhaustion. And the rock became a burden. The rock became a symbol of rejection. She's gone. She is not caring about us anymore. I'm just simply enabling her to go off and do all she's doing and have a big life, and she's not loving us anymore. And the rock eventually gets dropped. Now, when the rock gets dropped, it shatters. Now, what's interesting about this, or what's sad about this, most of us don't realize for a long time the burden we're putting on someone else when we ask them to carry our rock. But we all know it when the rock drops, don't we? When the rock drops, it usually is some final straw that just kind of broke, as we say, the straw that broke the camel's back. It maybe is a phone call that doesn't get made. Maybe it's a birthday that is forgotten. Maybe it's an appointment we're supposed to keep with our family or our spouse that we don't keep. And it finally breaks, and we don't understand why they're so upset, why they're so mad at us, but we know we're in big trouble. And usually when the rock drops, it shatters so that it does permanent damage. And all of us know when the rock drops because that's when the note is there: "I want you to move out." That's when we go home and our spouse has some type of chemical addiction. That's when we find out that our spouse has had an affair. That's when something tremendous happens and we all know the rock has been shattered. And then we'll do everything. We'll do anything we can. All the time that we were so busy before seems like nothing. And we'll do anything we can to try to put the rock back together and to put our life back together and try to fix the problem. But once the rock is shattered, it does permanent damage. Now, how do you know if you're leaving your spouse holding the rock? Well, we all do this from time to time, and it's fine to do it from time to time. The problem is when we always leave them holding the rock. You see, we leave our spouse holding the rock when we ask them to carry our load as well as theirs, when we're regularly absent at critical junctures in family life, when we find ourselves pointing to the future to somehow make up for the past and the present. "Honey, one day, I'm going to have time for you. One day I'll be there for you and the kids." You see, we assure them that things are going to change, and then they don't. Now, here's the question once again. Does your spouse feel they are priority? Notice the word "feel," because it's not enough just for them to be the priority, but they must feel they are the priority. Now, there was a busy executive one time that said he kept assuring the preacher that he loved his wife and kids, but finally the preacher interrupted him and said, "The problem is, you love your family, but they don't see your heart. They see your schedule. They see your schedule. And your schedule says you are too busy for them." You see, we must think about, does our spouse feel they are priority? You see, every one of us, and we'll talk about this next week with kids, but every one of us one of us want to feel accepted, valued, and loved. We all want to feel accepted, valued, and loved. And therefore, you make your spouse feel rejection when you regularly give your loyalty, time, and energy promised to them on your wedding to someone or something else. Now, it's fine for me to do that for certain reasons. I'm not saying that we should all, you know, totally quit our work or things like that just to dedicate our time to our spouse. No, there has to be balance in our life. That's the point of this series. We've got to choose what to cheat. And we don't want to cheat everything. We don't want to just quit things, but we've got to choose appropriately how much we cheat in terms of time and energy. But if we're regularly, habitually, always saying, can you hold that rock for me? Can you hold these duties? Can you hold down our relationship while I go off and do my own thing? And I'm not giving you what I need to be giving you. Pretty soon, they're going to feel rejection. And pretty soon, there's going to be major problems. Now, notice, as we think about how we fix this, the what always precedes the how. The what precedes the how. You have to determine what you're going to do first and then figure out how. Now let's think about this for a moment. God primarily tells us the what's in life. God tells us what He wants us to do. He wants us to become a Christian. That is the what. This is what you are supposed to do, become a Christian. He tells us the what's in life. And then He gives us a brain to figure out how we're supposed to do it. He tells us what He wants us to do with our talents. He wants us, number one, to be good stewards with them. He wants us to use them for His glory and good. But how? That's up to us to figure out. But we're going to be judged upon how we do it, right? He, as I've talked about in all those scriptures I went through earlier, He wants us to prioritize our marriage. He wants us to love our spouse. That's the what. Now, you've got to do the how. But let me tell you something. We try to come up with every reason why it won't work. We've got to decide the what first. In other words, we've got to determine that we're going to quit asking our spouse to hold our rock. We must make a decision to quit cheating our spouse and re-engage in truly loving them. You know, it also might mean, for others, it might mean quit supporting a cheating spouse. Back to John and Phyllis. When John came in, John eventually had to admit that, you know, though he was upset at Phyllis, for those years he had really enabled her. And though he would fuss at times and say, you know what, you're on the road too much, he really liked the money she was making. And he really did not ever just say, we can't do this anymore. And he really was always giving her the approval of doing it. You know, sometimes it means that we say, you know what, I can't hold this rock anymore. Because if I keep holding it, I'm going to drop it and bad things are going to happen. And sometimes we have to get radical before that point. You see, we have to realize that we cannot facilitate their poor priorities. And we have to do what's best and call their attention to what's best for the marriage. Now, how do we prioritize our spouse? Four things on how we prioritize our spouse so that rocks are not dropped. And so that we don't ask our spouse to carry our rock. I want to give you four things. Number one, give them time. Give them time. And it's a challenge for all of us. This is what we're talking about, choosing to cheat. But if I'm always cheating my spouse with my time, and I've got time for everybody else, and I've got time to play golf, and time to go hunting, and time, ladies, to go shopping, and time to go with the girlfriends, and we've got time to do everything else, time to be involved in school, time to be involved at work, time for all these other things, time to take care of the kids and time to go take care of the grandkids. And I've got time for all these things, but my spouse is always the bottom of that list. They're not going to feel like priority. You see, we have to give them time. We have to spend large amounts of time working on our marriage. It might involve for you going on walks. One of the greatest
worst things that have happened in our families in the last 30 years is that we have moved the kitchen table out of our families. Those times of spending and eating meals together are so important. And so we have to give them time. It might be making time away at night from Facebook and TV and internet and all the other things to reconnect, or maybe we should say connect, with our spouse. We need that daily connection. Give them time. And then secondly, we have to give them care. You have to be emotionally care for your spouse. If I'm always saying, here's my rock, and I need you to care about me. Look, I'm having this problem. I'm struggling with this. I've got this going on in my life, and I really need you to care about me. And they do. They're always taking that rock and holding it, and they're caring about me and loving me. But if when they say to me, I need you to care about me, well, they don't come out and say that, but that's really what they're saying in the struggles they're having in their life and just their concerns they're going through. And I say, I am too busy for you now. You see, I've got all these other cares.
You see, our spouse wants to feel that we are priority in terms of our hurts, setbacks, struggles, and problems. Empathize, seek them, love them, and be accepting and caring. What we're talking about is simple kindness and love, care. Give them help. Look for opportunities to help them in what's going on. Whenever you and I
stop and help our spouse, it says your priority. Maybe it's helping with house chores, whether inside or outside. Maybe it's helping with some project at work. Maybe it's helping with the kids. Whatever it is, it's helping our spouse. It says, you know what, I've got a busy life, but helping you make your life a little easier, doing a chore, doing something for you, that is priority for me. And then the last I would suggest is give them pride. Brag on them. Always compliment and encourage them. Let them know how proud you are of them and express appreciation and love. So give them time. Give them care. Give them help. Give them pride. These are all ways that we can say, you know what? My marriage, you as my spouse, are priority to me. I've got a lot of things going on, you can tell them, by your actions. And I'm going to have to cheat, maybe keeping the cars clean. Maybe I'm going to have to cheat being as good a fan to my sports team as I would like to be. Maybe I'm going to have to cheat my work. Maybe I'm going to have to cheat my hobby. I'm not going to be as good as I want to be in that hobby. I'm going to have to cheat maybe getting to talk on the phone as much or be on Facebook as much. But you know what? I'm going to cheat those things because I don't want to cheat you. Don't want to cheat you. Now, asking the question again, does your spouse feel cheated? Notice the word feel. We've got to start picking up our rocks before it shatters. Are you leaving your spouse holding the rock? Now, last week I ended like this, and I want to end like this again.
If you're cheating your spouse and you ask them and they tell you and you know and they've been telling you for years,
honey, man or woman, you're not giving me. You're not, what we have here is just to pretend. You're not meeting my needs. You're not really putting me as priority. If you've been doing that, I want you to realize that's what you're doing. And you're asking your spouse to hold your rock, and pretty soon that rock's going to fall. And I preach this lesson because I have seen, and you have seen, the shattered rocks. You see, the preachers get called, the elders get called, the meetings start taking place, not when the rocks are being held, but when they're shattered. And I don't want to see more shattered rocks, because it's hard to put them back together when they're shattered. But if we can do things to prevent them from getting shattered, we can be much more successful. And so if you're not willing to start picking up your own rock, I just want you to do one thing, and then this lesson you can say, hey, I'm dismissing that preacher because I did what he said. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to set your wife down, set your husband down, and say, now, honey, I love you, but right now, blank is more important to me. You got to say that. Because if you're going to cheat him, you got to say, look, right now I love you. And one day maybe that's going to change. But right now, my career is more important than you. Right now, my hobby is more important than you. Right now, my friends are more important than you. Right now, my kids are more important than you. Right now, that's why I'm cheating you. So if you can just hold that rock a little longer, you can just hold it a little longer. Because I want you to know the reality of the situation. You've got to know what you're putting in front of your spouse. So you need to have that conversation.
This morning, if you're ready to put down a rock and you're ready to start carrying your own weight, if we can help you in a marriage, if you need to get your life right with God, we talked about that last week, and not cheating God.
If we can help you in any way, come as together we stand and sing.